Welcome to our day three preview from the 2018 US Open. I'm Peter Rogers with Ravi Uber. A special welcome to tennis fans around the world listening in on Courtside, the official podcast of the US Open. So let's get to our preview of day three. Let's start with the women first. Serena Williams, of course, will be the big talking point. She always is, arguably the greatest of all time. She's taking on Karina Witthoff. Any hope for the German?
Based on what we saw from Serena in the first round, no, I don't think so, because she was very, very composed, very smooth against Magda Linette. We're talking about some of the players who've had struggles in the first round, both on the men's side and the women's side. You know, Roger had a tough time closing it out. Rafa was down a break in the second set against Ferrer before Ferrer had to retire. Djokovic was down in the third set. Sharapova really struggling. So of all those, you take all that in consideration. It was a very good opener for Serena Williams. And no, I don't think Witthoff is going to have much of a chance in this one. I know she likes to hit a very, very big ball. She's a very aggressive type of player. But Serena, for me, served pretty well in that first round match against Magda Linette. She looked very sharp from the baseline. So you think that Serena is going to go through in straight sets.
And we all know about the Serena Williams-Maria Sharapova rivalry. Karina Witthoff is a big Sharapova fan. Models her game and also her look on Sharapova. Do you think that'll even give even more sort of spice and fight to the Serena Williams game? Or am I reading too much into that?
I'm not sure Serena would even know about that. So unless you told her, Pete, about that, then maybe that would spur her on. But I don't think she quite knows that. And of course, when we think about Serena, we're automatically also thinking about Venus, because the draw set up these two for possibly playing in the third round. But Venus doesn't have an easy one in her own second round match.
Yeah, with that matchup, incidentally, Serena Williams taking on Karina Witthoff, the first match of the night session on the Arthur Ashe Stadium, getting underway 7 p.m. local time. So avoids the day when the heat will be very, very hot. It's meant to be hotter tomorrow on day three than it was today. Staying with the Americans, of course, Madison Keys winning through today. Sloane Stephens, the defending champion, continues her defense. She is first up on Arthur Ashe at midday against a player who not too many will know about, Kalinina from the Ukraine. So Sloane Stephens, I mean, what did you make of her first round performance? Can she continue to impress?
I thought it was a good first round performance because, you know, if we've talked about Keys and the pressure she had coming out to defend those final points, well, this is Sloane Stephens defending the title. So I thought it was a pretty good first round. You have to consider also that Rodina had a good Wimbledon, her first round opponent, Evgenia Rodina, who upset Madison Keys, who was playing some good tennis. She also is a mom like Serena. So it was good for Sloane Stephens to get through that. I also think just to get that first match under her belt, out of the way. She's been facing a lot of questions coming into the tournament and also after the first round. You know, how are you feeling? What's it like being the defending champion? And to that, she said, you know what, okay, since she won the U.S. Open, maybe a lot more expectation. She has to do a bit more things, but she seems to be handling it pretty well. And I really love the maturation in her game in the last year. Sloane Stephens, the great final she played in Canada against Simona Halep. It was a match where she lost the first set in around an hour, more than an hour. And you thought, okay, what's going to happen in the second set? Is she going to still hang in there, or is it going to be one-way traffic? It wasn't. She won the second, forced the third. For me, a good start for her, and I expect her to win tomorrow against, as you say, kind of an unknown quantity in Kalinina.
Yeah, and it's interesting you mentioned that final. I mean, I think she's done brilliantly well to defend the points from the US Open Series, and I think that's a sign maybe of just how comfortable she's feeling right now. Of course, generally has a pretty relaxed nature on court, has a very relaxed coach as well with Kamal Murray, who I think has done a sterling job with her. So that'll be fascinating. Meanwhile, on the Louis Armstrong court, the first two matches on the Louis Armstrong court tomorrow, fascinating women's encounters. Tatiana Maria, a very awkward German customer against Elina Svitolina, the seventh seed here at the US Open. And then following that one, Camilla Giorgi, although not before 1 p.m., will take on Venus Williams. Fair to say, I wouldn't like to be a tennis ball in that one.
Yeah, I mean, some really, really hard strokes we're going to see from Camilla Giorgi. She's having maybe what I would think would be her best season so far, Giorgi. She's had some injury problems, had to shut down her season after the U.S. Open last year, come out strong, recently made her first Grand Slam quarterfinal at Wimbledon, where she lost to Serena. So she's coming in with a lot of confidence. And, you know, the only time she's played Venus, that was at the Australian Open 2015. It was a pretty long three-setter, a match where Venus had to come back and win. So I think there's, if I'm saying that, I think Serena is going to, you know, comfortably beat Karina Witthoff. For me, this one could be a toss-up, especially considering the fact that in the first round match, Venus had a long match against Svetlana Kuznetsova in the heat. So how is she going to fare coming back from that? You know, she's another player who has now a lot of tennis of late, had the knee injury, the knee issue coming out of Cincinnati. So, yeah, we hope we get, I think, and I also think, you know, the majority of tennis fans, overwhelming majority of tennis fans, want to see Venus Serena in the third round. But Georgia, I just have this feeling she might be able to pull off the upset.
It's a funny one, isn't it? Because usually you always say, oh, when it's Venus Williams, it's always on her own racket. It's always on Venus Williams' own racket with the power she possesses. But of course, Georgie also packs a punch. And sometimes with her, it's on her own racket. So if she can produce...
Oftentimes it's on her racket.
If she can produce peak form, then may well cause an upset there. Of course, Venus Williams seeded 16th at the tournament this time around. Of course, one player who hasn't been talked about much, Garbiñe Muguruza. She's in the night session in the Louis Armstrong court. The 12th seed taking on Muchova. So that's another fascinating women's match just to watch out for. That is the second of the matches over on Louis Armstrong Stadium's court. Moving on to the men, though, on day three. Rafael Nadal continues his title defense against Vasek Pospisil. And again, can you see any way that Pospisil can cause an upset, push Nadal perhaps? Of course, it's completely two contrasting styles coming together. Pospisil, a big server, likes to come forward, hits a flat ball, but Nadal... I mean, it almost plays into his way, yeah, doesn't it? And also with the way the court's playing,
yeah, exactly.
Is everything going Nadal's way at the moment?
I was just going to say that, you know, with the conditions. Also, Pospisil, you know, he had that spike a couple of years ago when he made the Wimbledon quarterfinal. Since that time, he's struggled in singles. He's a Grand Slam winner in the doubles. I think he's managed to just stabilize his ranking just a little bit. He does have a big serve, but it's not a crazy overpowering serve. He's not going to come out and hit 30 aces against Rafa, and I think to beat Rafa you're going to need to do that, so he doesn't have that in his locker. He does have a nice all-around game. He'll go forward. He's big shot off the ground as the forehand. He beat Andy Murray a couple of years ago at Indian Wells, but no, I just don't see Rafa having too much of an issue against Pospisil. Pains me to say it, as you know, my fellow Canadian in Vasek Pospisil, but no, I think Rafa's going to go through, and I think he'll like also the fact that he's playing at night once again.
Yeah, you took the words out of my mouth. I was going to say, as in the fact that, particularly with the shot clock coming into play, with the baking heat that we've had, that combined as well. But of course, he is second on the Arthur Ashe Stadium court, following Serena Williams' match against Karina Vitoft. Also coming back onto the Arthur Ashe Stadium court, Andy Murray, former champion here at the US Open, he takes on Fernando Verdasco, and that one really is a popcorn encounter.
13-1, head-to-head for Murray now. And however, that doesn't tell the entire story, because if you look at it from 2009, it's been much different in terms of the complexion of the matches. Most of them have been very, very close. The year that Andy won Wimbledon for the first time, Verdasco led him 2-0 before Andy came back to win in five. He does have a power game, Verdasco. And you think he's one of those guys, when his career ends, can we say, like a Ferrer, did he max out on his talent? In his case, I have to say no, because you have to remember, at the start of his career, he was one guy who was really singled out as a player who could do big things in tennis. Now, 2009, he did have that massive year, making the semifinals at the Australian Open and also making the year-end championships. I think he needs to stick to one thing in his mind, Verdasco, and sometimes it can waver. He needs to think power tomorrow against Murray. He does have this knack, and I've mentioned it so many times in the past, just rolling in the serve. When he has one of the biggest serves in the men's game, if he can bomb the serve down and do that on a consistent basis, he's going to have the physical edge against Murray. Murray's, you know, he's playing his second Grand Slam match in around a year, in more than a year. So I actually think Verdasco is the favorite in this one.
Particularly in the heat, because it is second up on Arthur Ashe, and it sounds strange, doesn't it, saying that Murray is physically the weaker, especially against Fernando Verdasco, but that is the situation right now. What are you expecting from Murray? He's still very much a work in progress.
Yeah, very much, and he's been open and honest about that, and he's not trying to bluff anybody. We've seen that watching him. You know, there were times in the match, early in the match against Duckworth, where even as he put it, you know, he wasn't moving as he would have wanted. Towards the end of the match, I think, you know, it got better, and he actually said that he felt that he was getting better towards the end of the match. But yeah, it's still very much a work in progress, and you have to remember the type of injury that he had. It's not an elbow injury, for example, the type that Djokovic has had. It's not a shoulder problem, which should only really affect his serve or affect that big time. It's a massive part of his game. The hip affects his scrambling, his ability to move around the court. And, you know, that's the aura that he had. The ball is just going to keep coming back, but not only coming back, just pushing it back, but doing a lot with it. So, yeah, and he, you know, listening to another interview that he that he had recently, saying that it's all about next year. He's trying to get to 100% for 2019 and start from that point. And this is the start of it to try and get there.
In terms of start of it for many players, of course, trying to make their way through the draw. Juan Martin Del Potro, former champion, takes on Dennis Kudla. That is the third matchup on Louis Armstrong Stadium tomorrow. Also in action, some American interest. Jack Sock finally getting what was it, his fourth win of 2018. He now takes on Nicolas Basilashvili, of course, a winner in one of the 500 series events earlier on in Hamburg. So he's a dangerous player. John Isner, 11th seed, takes on Nicolas Jarry. Out of those three matches, what's the most likely upset? And although, would you even call it an upset if Basilashvili took out Jack Sock?
No, I wouldn't call it an upset if he wins that match. As you say, he just won in Hamburg on the clay. I love watching him play Basilashvili because he's a real shot maker. Baseline, he sticks right up on the baseline, likes to go for his shots, doesn't, you know, loiter well behind the baseline. I like Nicolas Jarry as a player. Watched him several times. Massive serve. He's a player from Chile, can play well on all surfaces. Had a match that he probably should have won, Wimbledon, against Mackenzie McDonald. Let that one slip away. Had good success on the clay during the Golden Swing. He has a massive serve. So I think that match tomorrow with Big John, there could be a fair few tie breaks in that one. And when that happens, it's not a toss-up, especially because Isner has played so many tie breaks and has a very good record. But, you know, it can come down to those big, big points. And John is playing good tennis. He's playing good tennis off the back of Wimbledon. I think, you know, not playing last week, Winston-Salem would have been a very hard decision for him to skip that tournament. It's his hometown tournament. He's had so much success there, but I think the right thing to do, and a good first-round win, because he didn't spend too much time on the court. He was on court for, I think, 2 hours or under 2 hours. But I do think that's going to be a close match tomorrow between Isner and Jarry.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating stuff. It's action-packed, as it is always, on day three, which is, of course, the first matches, which are second round encounters. It's going to be another scorchingly hot day, possibly hotter than it was today. So that's going to be a factor once more. Let's just hope we don't get too many retirements and it's all won with good tennis. Just to remind you then of the order of play for day three on the Arshuras Stadium court. We kick things off at midday. Stevens taking on Kalinina. Then it's Murray against Verdasco. And then in the night session on that court, starting at 7 p.m. local time, Serena Williams against Karina Witthoft. Then it's Rafa Nadal against Vasek Pospisil. Meanwhile, we start at 11 a.m. on Louis Armstrong. That'll be Tatiana Maria against Elina Svitolina. That'll be followed by Georgi against Venus Williams. Del Potro Kudla rounds things off in the day session there. The night session, it's Sock against Basilashvili, and that will be followed by Garbiñe Muguruza against Muchova. So much to look forward to. And that's our preview of day three of the 2018 US Open. For Ravi Uber, I'm Pete Rogers. Thanks for listening. Join us for complete live coverage every day on the US Open Radio, presented by American Express. You can find us on usopen.org or the US Open app.
Celebrating 50 years of the US Open with the legendary Rod Laver.
Well, we're delighted to have Rod Laver with us here as we celebrate this 50th anniversary of the U.S. Open, of course, the first one held in 68. But, Rod, your big year, of course, was the second year, 1969, because you were there to culminate. That was the completion of your second Grand Slam. And mm-hmm. you did it in only the second year of open tennis. And, of course, you could never have done it in 68 because the Australian Open hadn't gone open yet. So this was the first year that anybody could possibly pull this off in open tennis. So as you got to Forest Hills, and at that stage, you knew you were on the cusp of some of a really remarkable historical achievement, even more remarkable than 62. So moving on to the Arthur Ashe semifinal at the U.S. Open, talking about having to keep your focus. I mean, Arthur had played you so tough at Wimbledon, a brilliant first set before you came back to win that. And now here you are against Arthur again, who was the defending champion. What were your thoughts on that match?
You know, Arthur, for some reason, I always felt pretty confident against Arthur. A lot of people had trouble with his serve, and I seem to be able to. I know on the first court that was the shot that he used to go out wide on my backhand. All I had to think about was I know that Arthur didn't have a really good forehand volley or a half volley, and so all I did was go out there. Well, he went out wide, but most of the time. And I just angled across court from my backhand into his forehand, and his forehand volleying or half volleying, and that was I was always in the match when I was playing Arthur because you know, he wasn't just going to bomb these big aces past me all the time. And so I felt pretty confident. And I think after you've had some matches where you come through, you know, whether it be Roy Emerson and Dennis Ralston earlier rounds, you've come through some of the tough matches, and now you're pretty confident. So it was something that I just I felt pretty comfortable about being able to play Arthur. And we did have to stop for about, we stopped for the day. And I think we were in the fourth set and, you know, came back on the next day. And it was only, you know, the three games, and I had beaten Arthur.
Absolutely. So now here you are, having beaten Arthur with a string of fine wins over Dennis and Roy and Arthur, and now who should be standing across the net from you for the finals is Tony Roach. But you had some bad weather, as you remember, Rod. The weather was bad after you finished off Arthur, and the final pushed over to Monday, and then a helicopter had to come hover over the stadium court to help dry it because there had been so much rain, and you were delayed about an hour and a half. So how much did all of that weigh on your mind? You're trying to get through the final hurdle and win the Grand Slam, and you've got all these other obstacles, and you've got Roach.
You don't think of all the things that, you know, could go wrong. I think I was always pretty positive, and you know, when you put a helicopter on top of the grass and you put those blades in there and try to heat it up. Oh, I think all we did was brought more water up to the top of the surface rather than drying the top itself. And anyway, that was, you're always caught up on grass courts with all that, those elements. And I think, you know, during the Australian Championships, you know, over those years that we played all the state titles over there, and it was, you know, so you got caught with these conditions. But when I finally looked at the elements, and I had spikes, you know, which are they're about 3/8 of an inch in length and a blunt. And so I asked Billy Talbot, the referee at that stage, and I said, if I can't stand up on the court here, can I put spikes on? And they said, you know, this is the last match, so you'd be my guest. If you need them, you can have them. And so, you know, that's how I went on the court. And I played the first set, and, you know, was, you know, slipping and sliding and wasn't very confident. And Tony was the same way. He was sliding too. In the end, I finally said, you know, I have to change into spikes.
But of course, Rod, you did that, but that was also, you lost a very, almost a heartbreaking first set when you looked like you were going to win it, and you eventually lost it 9-7. You never looked discouraged. I mean, was it because you felt you could go to the spikes and get the better footing and lift your game accordingly?
You know, you always hope that you can. But I played with spikes, you know, a lot of players haven't had put spikes on, so they don't realize that there's no skidding. You know, you don't slide to any ball. You run to every shot. And I knew that. And, you know, and the court was soft. And of course, I was, when you're stopping and starting, you know, you're digging the court up. And it wasn't easy to be confident. But at that stage, I'd been in with spikes, you know, a lot. So I felt comfortable about progressing along, you know, not trying to do too much of a bottom game with trying to hit winners. It was more keeping the ball low over the net, and if the balls, as we found out, but they didn't bounce very high, so, you know, that was probably the best thing I could have done, was just to keep the ball low over the net and make Tony dig him out.
And you were, Rod, you were able to sweep those last three sets at the cost of only five games. Did it surprise you that you, after losing a tough first set, that you could turn the match around that convincingly, because you looked in total control as you won those last three sets and captured the win in four sets?
It was a close match the first set, but as soon as I got into making, you know, all of getting Tony's serve back, controlling the points a little bit on my serve, because I could get to the net fairly quickly and I had good balance, and so I was, you know, I was not having any problem at all in with my volleying or the low shots. It changed the game. When I had good footing and Tony didn't have any footing, you know, I looked at him and thinking, I didn't know if he had spikes or not. And I just said, well, I just got to keep working him through and trying to wrong foot him a lot and, you know, trying to get him, keep him off balance. You play the conditions. And that's what, you know, I guess I always realized that, you know, it's no use coming off the court and saying, I wish the court would have been better. I would have played better. You know, you're too late. And so I found myself, you know, going, every post was a winner.
Rod, how gratifying was this one in 69 against all the best players under 110, second year of open tennis, versus the one in 62 when you were an amateur and you still had to beat a lot of fine players, including Emerson in three finals, but that your wasn't quite, you know, there were some missing players. There were the pro game was absent, the likes of Gonzalez and Rosewell, these guys were not around. So how did you compare 69 to 62? And also, you received a $16,000 check for winning the 69 Open, and I don't think it was the same in 62. Compare the two.
No, you're right. It was a different world back then. And you know, the 69 opposed to 62, I was much more proud of 69, I think, because of all the fact that it was open tennis. And I had against everybody. And, of course, you know, in 62, you know, there was no Hode, no Rosewall, no Gonzalez, you know, none of these players, because they had turned pros the years before. And it was still a great effort on my part to come off. And I played Roy Emerson in three of the four finals. It was a thrill to play both. But I think 69 was the most satisfying when I looked back at all of my opponents.
Rod, looking after that 62 triumph, obviously you as you alluded to, you turned pro, so you had those 5 years where you couldn't play the majors, and you were competing and learning a lot by playing against the likes of Hode and Gonzalez in pro tennis. And then you also mentioned that great Wimbledon pro event that you won that really was instrumental in bringing about open tennis. Looking back on it, what do you remember most about that period, and how important was it to you that the open game, how optimistic were you during that period as you played the pro game that we would have open tennis and you would have a chance to be competing in that forum again?
You know, it was a big decision, because when I looked at, you know, all the Hodes and Rosewalls and Trabitz and Trabitz and some of the other players that turned professional, because there wasn't any money in the amateur game at all. And so you've won Wimbledons and the US Opens, and you're looking at your bank account, and there's nothing in it. And so I just knew that I had to turn professional. I couldn't afford to play this as an amateur. And so I looked at you know, my whole schedule, and I looked at thinking, I'm never going to be able to play Wimbledon again. I'll never play Wimbledon. I'll never play Australia. I'll never play any of these big tournaments again, because I've elected and I've decided to turn pro. And so that was a big decision on my part, to just accept that, you know, things aren't like they were. You know, I've got Hode and Rosewall. I remember playing them down in Australia. And I ended up, I think I played Hode, I think 12 matches, and I lost every one of them. And I played Rosewall, and I think I won two matches out of the 12 or 14 that we played. So, you know, I just knew that there was a lot more for me to understand in the pro game. And I set about understanding and watching them very carefully, what they did. They didn't make mistakes. Their first serve generally always went in the court. They didn't have hit second serves. And if the ball is too pretty tough, don't try and go for a winner when it's not on. Play it more carefully or play it lob. That was where I came from. When I came back into the open ranks, when open tennis, a lot of guys like Roy Anderson and, you know, any of the amateur top players, whether it be Tom Ocker or any of these guys, they said, "Bob, your game has changed so totally." And I found myself pretty proud of the fact that I had been able to then, after 2 years, I was able to beat Hode and Rosewall pretty regularly. And so, you know, when I look at my game, you know, it was totally different. I think Roy Emerson said, "Well, where's that easy little second serve you used to have?" You know, how come you've got this big serve now? And I said, well, yeah, that'll probably get beaten every time I turned up. And so, you know, I think I improved my game 100% from when I moved from an amateur into the open ranks.
Thanks for listening to Courtside, the official podcast of the U.S. Open. We hope you enjoy the 2018 U.S. Open, and thank you for listening all year to our celebration of 50 years of the U.S. Open.